Speaker. Time now is 5:35. We have Senator Green, Huggins, Wilkowski, and my good friend Tom Wagner from Kena. Today we have two bills before us. Senate Bill 267, which is the Wildlife Violator Compact, which is intention that we move that today. The next is Senate Bill 284, Board of Fisheries and Membership, and we'll be hearing that as a follow-on bill. And initially we have Captain Burke Waldron. Are you online, please? Captain Waldron?
Yes, Captain Waldron's here.
Okay, good. Would you just put yourself on the record so we got that, so we get ready to go? You're ready?
Certainly. Captain Burke Waldron, the Department of Public Safety, Alaska Wildlife Troopers.
Okay, thank you. And next, Mr. Kevin Saxby.
He might not be there.
Now, Kevin, are you there?
Yes, I am, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, would you put yourself on the record so we'll be ready to go?
Kevin Saxby, Senior Assistant Attorney General, assigned to the Division of Wildlife Conservation and Board of Game.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yes, sir.
I'm Jeannie Osnes, staff to Representative Craig Johnson. And yesterday we were talking a little bit about the form, I guess, that the public safety would be entering into. I was able to speak with our database program that all of the states are using, and this would be your main page that the troopers would see. They would have to have a username and an ID to get on. They have here different ways that you would browse through the reports. You could go by violator, by citation, or by the violator. Under the action, you can look at the suspension entry, or you as a specific state can ratify or review different suspensions or actions that are happening by the other states. This table will show you the, if you wanted to enter it in by an agency or an office. You have information about the violator, the suspension status, and then reference through, and this is what I didn't know yesterday, was that not only do we have the 50 states, but there are 18 others, which are the Canadian provinces, Guam, Virgin Islands, and Puerto Rico. There are 1,834 counties, and then there is also all of the countries that are involved in around the world, of which there are 239 countries. So it goes from Andorra to Zimbabwe. So no matter where the person is living in the world, there is a way to identify where they are and what action was taken against them. The software is smart enough that the state can go in and choose specifically how they want to look at these different species that we were talking about yesterday. Big game would have
let's look at frogs.
Frogs in the small game.
Frogs in Alaska. Huh?
They are considered here under all fishing. They do have frogs here. But each state can add to add to the list that's on the right and assign them on the left. So as your statutes change or as things change within your own state, then you can add and subtract all of the
You know, we talked about yesterday that Crow and Senator Wagner and I were talking about crows earlier, and I don't see crows on there, but that's okay. That's okay.
A crane. We got a crane.
Crane. Okay. That's fine.
Which isn't quite there, but maybe they have raven here. They have grouse.
Yeah. That was in
Nutria. That was interesting.
That word.
Snakes, squirrels, prairie dogs, wolf. So anyway, there's quite a ways that you can look at the species, and then throughout the database, you can set up your own sorting. As the administrator, you can sort by name, date, species, violation date, hundreds of ways to sort through. And the people who are involved with a suspension at the time will be active, and otherwise you have people who are off the list, but still in the database.
Right. Yeah, Jeannie, help us out quickly as far as, I mean, I think you described earlier about the system was secure, but how do you confirm the people with like names, maybe same state, is Social Security logged, or what's the confirmation?
Here is, there's probably a home state, their address, but here is their eye color, race, gender. I'm sure their home address would be in there. Your suspension status, and the fellow who actually puts this together is available if we wanted to ask specific questions. But everything that's on your suspension information, then when you get that citation and you are put through the court system, all the information that they have.
Senator
to
Wagner.
Separate people.
Do you know, are the counties sub-grouping under each state, or are they, how do they list the counties?
I'm not sure how that works, because we basically, in all the states, seem to have their own state system where the department is actually the administrator. It could be that they have, like our VPSOs, out in an area, or like in a county, I'm sure. Not
well,
quite like our VPSOs, but.
No, the reason I was asking, counties traditionally outside, counties offer hunting license and fishing license also.
I didn't know that.
And they're only good in the county boundaries of the counties.
I see.
So it's what I'm wondering is what that causes, what effect that causes when, with the posting and everything, because that's a lot of counties.
It is a lot of counties, and they.
And they do all offer, well, I don't know whether they all do anymore. They used to all offer county license, were much less than the state. But you were just restricted to hunting or fishing in the county then.
Right.
Well, having that variety, I think, is very helpful to get that deep into a database to not only find that this fellow has a state license, but maybe a county license over in another state. And that's one of the reasons the company, Mr. Don Shefton, is the fellow who spoke to me about the actual security of this system. But Don Glennon today spent some time with me allowing me to get into this database. And he was saying that by taking the violator completely out of the database would become a policy matter for the states that are involved. The 28 states would be able to make the decision to take someone specific totally out of the database. But they recommend not doing that for things such as legal proceedings after the fact, trend analysis, and tracking habitual violators. But those people who do not have their license revoked at this time, because they've done their time and paid their dues, they stay in another section of the database.
Jeannie, as far as the ages, I know the other day you had your graph that showed down to the age of 18. What is the lower limit as far as entry into the system?
I would think the adult of that, the adult age of that state.
Okay.
But I don't know for sure.
Yep. Let's check with Mr. Saxby quickly. Mr. Saxby?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, Charlie Huggins here. Did you hear the question about the lower age limit?
No, I didn't quite hear that.
Yeah, the question is, the graph we had the other day showed age 18 and up to 80-something, as I recall, where they had the number of violations or just a representation of it. The question is, on the lower side, is there a limit factor, or is it by state, or what's the variable?
I don't think there's anything in the bill that addresses that, Mr. Chairman, so it would follow that would it be up to each state. In Alaska, as you probably know, you don't need a license if you're under 16.
Okay, so help us out. If it, the person is 17 in Alaska, what would the status be?
If they committed a violation and they were prosecutable as an adult, they would be subject to the same penalties as, and prohibitions nationwide as anyone else, I believe.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much. And let the record show that we've been joined by Senator McGuire and Senator Stevens. Jeannie, other things to add?
No, just that the business has a spot check that is done, that Visa does, MasterCard does, and they get a certificate. And systems consultant, this is their January certificate, and it's a spot check that Visa or any of the credit card companies will come in to check the secureness of the system that is being used. And it's a very hard certificate to get, and they do have theirs.
So this is a certified system?
Yes, this okay. is. And only the public safety administrator would at this point have the ability to get on there to add, subtract, make reports, sort through, and put those reports however they designed that they needed it for their use. Fish and Game did make a point to me today that they received some funding last year to computerize their system of licensing. And 35 of their largest vendors, as well as all of their departments around the state, will be computerized. And I think once this bill passes, if it passes, then the administrator would then be the person to deal with the process of how and who would be able to either look at this or have public safety send a list that is secure. But at the last speaking to Al Kane, the enforcement officer, he said that everything would stay with the troopers.
Okay. In that respect, Mr. or Captain Waldron, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Yeah, could you just give us a quick review on responsibility within your organization and how that would work for this system?
Certainly, we have made the decision to have Department of Public Safety be the administrators of the compact simply because we are the enforcement agency in the state when it comes to licensing, and it just would be more simple for us to administer the program rather than have the Fish and Game administer the program and forward the information to us. So as the administrators of the program, we will have a single administrator who will review court judgments relating to wildlife, fish and wildlife cases, and make determinations on based on the sentencing from those judgments on whether to enter the individual into the compact database or not. That once those decisions are made, a clerk would be an in-house clerk would be assigned to update that list. From the information that Al Kane and I have done, mostly Al Kane, I'll add, initial startup may require more effort to get the system going. But once the system is up and going, most states that we've talked to spend somewhere between 10 and 20 hours a month between their administrator and the clerk to update and add new entries to the list. Historically, Alaska does not have a lot of revocations every year. It's less than 200 per year that we would be entering historically. So administratively, there's not a large burden placed on the department to keep the system up to date.
Okay. Thank you, Captain Waldron. Questions or comments for Captain Waldron? Yes, Senator McGuire.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And perhaps Jeannie or Captain Waldron could answer the question regarding expungement.
Yes.
That I asked.
Yes. Captain Waldron, did you hear the question reference expungement from Senator McGuire?
Right, and I did hear the question through the chair. I think Jeannie addressed that a little bit earlier with the list in terms of people getting expunged. It sounded to me, and this is a little bit new information to me, I learned some today too, that people stay in the database. It just the expiration date or their revocation is listed as current or not current. However, they remain in the database unless the member states adopt language to change that. Is that what I heard correctly, Jeannie?
That is correct. The people who have ended their revocation stay behind another wall of security. So the people who are active are there, and you can find them by looking through the suspension either by name or by action. Suspension ratify, let's see, suspension. This is how our state would actually ratify if we chose to allow that person to have his license taken away. The system manager there was saying that he said that there were legal proceedings that are sometimes after the fact. He said there was trend analysis for the enforcement people and also tracking habitual violators. And so those are the things that the administrator could go in and sort through. The compact states, though, could agree to take a name off.
Yes,
and so it is there is a possibility to take it off.
Well, I follow up. I mean, I can only speak for myself that probably unacceptable for me as the chair in this case of keeping somebody on the list. I mean, I think the average Alaskan would expect once they have, you know, been withdrawn as far as they're losing their license, then that the name would come off the list and they start anew. I don't know, Senator Blair.
Yeah, through the chair, even in Senator Green's prescription database, similar idea was one of the changes that was made was that, you know, after you, there's a period of time there that you fall off. I just think the potential for, that's a real privacy invasion. Is there anything we can do in this bill that would guarantee expungement after someone has served their?
I'm sure there is. I'm sure that if the discussion came forward that through our entry into the compact and our ability to deal with the compact members that we as a state could take our people off.
Yeah, and Representative Johnson, it looks like you're itching to.
No, I just wanted to
put yourself on the record. Quick.
For the record, Representative Craig Johnson, I apologize. I was in a transportation committee, so yeah.
The question right now is expungement and whether you become a permanent member, no matter what the wall is between those that are active and those that are inactive. Senator Wilkowski.
Thank you. The way I understood this was, once you've served your time, in other words, if you've had your license revoked for 3 years, once your 3 years are over, you can get a license anywhere else.
Correct.
Okay. So I guess though I look at this a little differently than the prescription database bill. In that one, we're putting everyone in there, including people who haven't been convicted of anything, innocent people. So I think expungement is really appropriate in that case. I don't see this any differently than a criminal case or a court case, for instance. It's a public record. Once you've violated the statute, it's a matter of public record, and so I really don't see much of a difference. I guess I just have a little bit different
Mr.
perspective
Chair,
on this.
Mr. Chair, this is Captain Waldron. Can I comment on that, please?
Please.
I agree with that last comment, that the purpose of remaining in the database is just for that very purpose. It's a criminal history database similar to all other criminal history databases like NCIC. However, you cannot list fish and wildlife convictions in NCIC. So this is a database that our troopers and our prosecutors could use to help with sentencing recommendations and sentencing guidelines at court hearings. So if someone's conviction would remain in the database. However, they are still not revoked. They're eligible to get a license in all member states. However, if they are charged with a violation in Alaska, we would have the ability to say, to have that person's prior fish and wildlife history in all the other member states available to us without having to contact each individual 28 states on their own.
Senator McGuire?
No comment.
Mr. Chairman, I do know when you go to the courthouse and you put somebody's name in, you can find whether they had a small claims against them back 10, 15 years. Mm-hmm. It's a criminal case that has been adjudicated at some point.
Mm-hmm. Yep, Senator Wagner?
Yeah, but I'm not sure that record spans another 28 states.
Right.
That you access at the courthouse. I think that's only the state of Alaska. The only ones that I've ever done have been just those violations of the state of Alaska, not all other states that you go into a wider database.
Mr. Chair, this is Captain Waldron again.
Yes.
Actually, that database is internet-based and is available to anyone. Someone in Florida could check someone's both civil and criminal history convictions on a court system database here in Alaska.
Mm. Senator Wilikowski?
These are all, if you commit one of these violations, you've committed a crime. Is that?
That's correct.
So I guess it's on the internet. I mean, you could go to Florida's database and you'll find if this person has committed a crime, you'll probably find them on there. I know in Alaska, if you've committed a fish and game violation, you're online whether you like it or not, and anyone in the world can find you.
Okay, other comments? Yeah, we'll set this bill aside.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm glad I showed up just in time.
Yeah, thanks. And we'll take a brief at ease. First, we'll come back to order. Just a reminder, if you're in the room and you want to testify, there's a sheet to sign in outside. We have a substantial number of people in Kenai, Homer, Matsu, Fairbanks, and one other off net that I see. With that, before us now, we will bring an act relating to the membership of the Board of Fisheries and providing for an effective date, which is a CS for Senate Bill 284, sponsored by Senator Green. And Janie Weiniger, please.
Thank you.
If you'd put yourself on the record, we'd be proud to hear from you.
Mr. Chairman, do you want me to move the committee?
Would you please?
Yeah, we have before us, I move that we use version V of Senate CS for Senate Bill 284 as our working document.
Okay. And it's been moved that version Victor be brought before us. Is there objections? Seeing
lots
none? Seeing none, Victor's before us.
You can leave.
Okay, Jane, if you put yourself on the record,
yes,
we're prepared to hear from you.
Good afternoon, Senate Resources Committee. For the record, my name is Janie Weiniger, and I'm staff to Senator Green. For us today is committee substitute for Senate Bill 284, version V. Senator Green introduced this legislation because she saw a disparity, the lack of fair and balanced representation on the Board of Fisheries. During testimony, you will hear from our constituents. I am only here to present the legislation as written. In your packet, you should have a Board of Fisheries support letter, and I'll show you what that looks like. It says boards and commissions. I'm going to refer to this. It's in your packet. I went through the whole entire thing, and there's 122 boards and commissions, and there's only four that are as lax as the Board of Fisheries, one of them being the Board of Game. But it doesn't spell out who should be on the Board of Fisheries. And that's what I'm referring to. Also, in that packet there, you will see there's an Alaska statute talking about the board support Do you have that in your? It says that members are appointed by the governor and confirmed by the legislature. Members are appointed on the basis of interest in public affairs, good judgment, knowledge, and ability in the field of action of the board, with a view to providing diversity of interest and points of view in the membership. And it's Alaska Statute 16.05221. Talking again about the 122 state boards, a lot of them are based on geographical requirements, licenses, like attorneys and some of the other boards, requirements of certifications, economic requirements, or political affiliations. And this is not the case at this time with the Board of Fisheries. The changes made from the introduced legislation, of course, and the new adopted CS is going to bring the board of the membership back down to 7 members from the 9 that originally were introduced, and create a definite guideline based on the user groups. Now, if I would like to read this, if I could, please, on the new CS, the board proposed in this new CS 2 members who represent commercial fishing interests and who do not hold and do not have an immediate family member who holds a sport fishing operator's license, a sport fishing guide license. Number 2 is 3 members who represent personal use or subsistence fishing interests and who do not hold and do not have an immediate family member who holds a commercial fishing permit or crew member permit, a sport fishing operator license, or a sport fishing guide license. B, do not own or have an immediate family member who owns a commercial fish processing business. 2 members who represent sport fishing interests and who do not hold and do not have an immediate family member who holds a commercial fishing permit or crew member permit and do not own or have an immediate family member who owns a commercial processing business. We feel this is fair, and CSSB 284 puts into statute selection requirements, and we think this is fair and balanced representation on the Board of Fisheries for years to come, regardless of who may be governor or who may be in a political leadership position at the Fish and Game. And I encourage your support of committee substitute for 284.
Okay, question of board members, Ms. Weiniger. Senator Wilikowski.
Just wondering why this has a fiscal note. Do you know why?
Yes, sir, because when we had the original legislation, it took it to 9.
Okay, so
members, and we brought it back down to 7.
It's got a 0 now. Zero.
Yes, sir, we think so.
Okay, so the current fisheries board, for the record, is how large?
7.
And this maintains the current
correct
number of 7?
Correct.
Which is why we have the CS. Is that accurate?
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Yeah, okay. Other questions in that respect? Or as we went through and looked at the exclusions of your qualification by family member or yourself, do we start zeroing out the pool, or is it like we still have a robust pool of Alaskans that would be available?
Yes, sir, I think so.
Okay. Okay. Other questions or comments? Okay.
Mr. Chair, yep. I would say one thing. The in all practicality, there's sort of an unwritten tendency to say there's a Sitka seat, a Kodiak seat, a Juno sports fish, and we're labeling them and geographically identifying them currently through the board and commission's process as they label their candidates. And so it would be far better to have some kind of defining descriptors so that we are able to go forward. You know, we may need to amend some of this to further define those members if the committee sees fit, but we're just trying to by interest for the time being.
Yeah, so to restate that, yes, Ms. Weiniger.
Senator, I just wanted to make one more point. There's not much change from where the board is now.
Mm-hmm.
This just defines it in statute.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But I agree with Senator Green in the sense that I haven't talked to many people about the composition of the board, but just today, I was talking to a member or a person that works in Fish and Game, and they talked about the Kodiak seat. Nothing against Kodiak, but they just said the Kodiak seat.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just referred to geographically.
What's your point?
We like those guys. You're eligible. So in that respect, this doesn't preclude a geographical connotation.
No, sir.
It just gives some prerequisite for what that person's background or the family background is.
Right.
Doesn't take away the geographical connotation,
right,
potentially. Other Senator Wilikowski.
Yeah. Do you know what the current composition of the board would be as in terms of sport and subsistence and commercial? Do you know how it breaks down currently?
I think currently the board we just know by geographically, and they come from diverse groups within on the board right now. But they're just, they have the Juneau seat, they have the Kodiak seat, they have the Fairbanks seat.
Unofficially.
Unofficially, correct.
Okay.
Unofficially, though.
Sports.
Right.
Yeah. Yes, Senator Steve.
Just a comment, Chairman. For many years, I know there was no Kodiak seat, and we were always wanting to get someone on. But I'm thinking that happens in time. That happens through the history of the,
sure,
of the board.
Sure.
Sometimes,
sure,
there's a person from Kodiak, sometimes there's not.
Sure.
Or wherever, you know.
Right. And, you know, in the case, because the current member that would, quote, be the Matsu seat is a former member of Fish and Game, as I recall.
Correct.
Would probably characterize as a sports fisherman. But then there was a question about his mother or mother-in-law having a commercial fishing permit. So there's a bunch of, and this would, as I read this, he would not be eligible if his mother owned a commercial fishing permit.
I believe.
Is that accurate?
That's,
yeah,
right.
So, it would put some bounds on, in this case, the person that's from Essex. Yes, Senator Wagner.
Well, right now, it isn't a matter of eligibility. It's a matter of whether they can deliberate and vote on certain items or not.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's a question where we want to tighten it up in the respect of whether you're precluded from voting or where you're precluded from being a member. And obviously, we don't want people to just continue to be conflicted out. I don't think. That's my opinion, anyway. I think we would all prefer, more often than not, that members be able to vote on supermajority of issues, kind of like we have here, where somebody objects and you have to vote. But a little different, but some connotations there. Are there other things that you need to add,
yes,
to this? Okay, very good. Let's let's see. Let's go to Fairbanks next to Mr. Virgil Uppenauer. Uppenauer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, if you would put yourself on the record, please, and we'll be proud to hear from you.
My name is Virgil Uppenauer. I live in North Pole, Alaska. I'm the chairman of the Fairbanks Fish and Game Advisory Committee. I'm a past member of the Board of Fisheries. I spent 8 years on it. And I am here today to speak in favor of Senate Bill 284. I believe that it will provide more balance and more fairness as far as the composition of the Board of Fisheries, because the Board of Fisheries are mandated by the Constitution to promulgate regulations that are going to result in sustained yield, mm-hmm, of our fishery resources. And of course, if you're going to have sustained yield, then you're going to have to conserve the resources in the proper manner to do that. I've seen many times, and especially in the last 5 years, where the Board of Fisheries just basically threw conservation of the resource to the wind. And now we've got some very serious conservation problems on the Yukon River, for instance, in Northern Cook Inlet, for instance. And it's basically because of allocation, because the current Board of Fisheries is manipulated by the Commercial Fish Division of the Department of Fish and Game, and they don't have the moral courage to follow through with their oath that they took, which is to follow the Constitution of the state and the sustained yield mandate. And so I think that putting, especially with the subsistence and personal use membership in there, which there's none on there now, that that will add much more balance to the board that's going to result in the constitutional mandate being followed. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yep. Thank you, Virgil. Stand by a moment. A question or comment?
Just a question. Thank you, Mr. Armanauer, for your years of service, 8 years on the board. That's pretty remarkable. Could you tell us your estimation, how things broke down over the years between commercial fishing, personal use, and sport fishing? Would you say you spent a third of your time on each one of those?
You mean in the proposals?
In the board meetings. Did the board meetings pretty much divide up between one-third commercial, one-third personal, one-third sport fishing?
It depends on the region and what you're addressing. I know that in, like in Southeast Alaska, for instance, the sport fishing issues are an extremely large portion of the meeting. Mm-hmm. And they have been on Kodiak meetings as well. And some meetings that...
Mr. Mason, can please hold?
Say again?
Yeah, continue on, Virgil. It's inadvertent.
It depends on the region. Some regions, there's a great deal of sport fish, and you may have more sport fish time spent on the sport fish issues than you do commercial fish issues. And I could give some examples, say like when we put an annual limit on Chinook salmon in Southeast Alaska, and the same thing in Kodiak when we did that. We spent a considerable amount of time doing that. And some of the commercial issues, such as, say, the Area M fishery, the June fishery in the South Peninsula, I've been to board meetings where we spent 15 full days just on that issue. Mm. Just one issue, interception of Northwest and Western Alaska chum salmon and sockeye salmon by the South Peninsula commercial fleet, where we spent 15 full days on one issue. So it just depends on the region. But as far as the subsistence issues go, I think they kind of take, and the personal use issues, they take back seat the majority, in my experience, the majority of the time. And currently we have very little representation on the board for those user groups.
Okay, Virgil, thank you very much for your testimony. We now will go to Kenai, Mr. Mike Fenton.
Yes, Mr. Chair, fellow board members. My name is Mike Fenton. I live in Sterling, Alaska, and I'm the president of the Kenai River Professional Guide Association. And
Mr. Fenton, if you would, we're going to limit testimony to 2 minutes because of the number of people we have signed up to testify. And Mike, are you still there?
Yes, I am, sir.
Yeah, please proceed. You have 2 minutes.
Yes, sir. I just like to would conceptually like to voice my support for House Bill 284. I think it does build in the potential for a greater representation of the user groups. I think this better representation is an absolute necessity. And I think the present situation that we're in now just allows too much potential bias to occur. So I and my fellow 11 guides here in this room would be in support of House Bill 284, sir.
Okay, thank you very much. Questions or comments from Mr. Fenton? Mm-mm. Seeing none, we next will go to Matsu, to Mr. Andy Couch.
Hello, board chair and members, members of the finance committee. Probably even got that wrong.
Andy, it's Senate Resources, and you have 2 minutes.
Okay, my name's Andy Couch. I'm a sport fishing guide in the Matsu Valley. I've been a member of the Ananuska Valley Fishing Game Advisory Committee for 4 years than I can remember, and I believe that CSSB 284, the language there, would be a very good change to the Board of Fisheries process. As was alluded to by Mr. Oppenhauer, we certainly have conservation problems that have not been addressed through the Board of Fisheries process this past year. And I think that the change in the makeup of the board, where that there's more user groups involved, and certainly more representation to people like subsistence or personal use, who don't seem to have much representation on the board, would definitely be beneficial. So.
Okay. Andy, thank you very much. We're kind of pressed for time here.
That's good.
I think we have your message. Questions or comments for Mr. Couch? Okay. Thank you very much, Andy. Next, we'll go to Homer, Alaska, to Mr. Wes Humbard.
Yeah, can you hear me?
Loud and clear.
Okay. My name is Wes Humbard. I've been a resident at 860 Willow Drive in Homer since 1971. I've been a commercial fisherman in Cook Inlet since 1966. Senate Bill 284 looks to me like another way the commercial fishermen can be managed politically instead of biologically. If your politicians would spend the same amount of effort and energy on removing the problems in a Matsu drainage, we wouldn't be here discussing this bill. Before, there used to be 32 lakes in a Matsu district that had pike in them. As of today, there's 162 lakes that have pike in them. There's a numerous beaver dams on all the streams in that area. These dams are known to stop the migration of salmon destined to the spawning grounds. The escapement goals were reached last year, which they said they weren't. Biological research done by the aquaculture that the counters are not accurate. The weirs that were put into the stream showed that there was more fish there than what the counters showed. I would hope that we spend more time and money solving the real problems related to the Matsu. Cook Inlet fishermen have not had a commercial fisherman on the board since 1975. And that was Danny Garut. If we get the pike and the beaver dams out of the Matsu systems and the returns of salmon don't rebuild, let everybody be curtailed, the commercial fishermen and the sport fishermen, until we get the problem solved. Don't make the commercial fishermen again and again be the sacrificial lamb for sport fish interest in the valley and to Kenai area. The board is already unfairly balanced towards sport fishermen. The real balance on the board should be 3 sport, 3 commercial, and 1 PU person. Maybe a good status would be to have no limit, have a commercial fishing on pike, a commercial fishery sport fisherman on pike, and get rid of some of the problems that's in the Matsu Valley. I'm against the bill, Senate Bill 284. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Humbard. And one question for you is Charlie Huggins. Would you support a buyback system for permits? Mr. Humbard, are you still there?
Yes, I'm here.
Yeah,
I would not support that, because all that does is eliminate the livelihoods of the people that have been fishing in the inlet for many, many years. And what is going to, the limit would not make a difference, because we'd lose the voice we have by the numbers. And we don't feel that's the way to go.
Okay, good. Thank you very much. And signed up in the room, we have Mr. Bob Penny. Bob? You have 2 minutes?
I'll try and be quick, Mr. Chairman.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, appreciate being here today. My name is Bob Penny. I live in Soldotna. I've lived in Anchorage and Soldotna since 1951, and I think many of you know I spend about half my time working on sport fishing licenses. I do have a bit of a financial conflict, and if I'm asked, I'll get into that. I have 2 things, Mr. Chairman. 1, conservation, and 2 is the unbalance that's unfair for the harvest of salmon to cook in it. And Mr. Chairman, I'll go to those very quickly. I was on the North Pacific Council for a term, and there's one thing I've learned in 25 years. Conservation comes first. The protection of the species has to be done. Now, this last board put the sockeye salmon in the Susitna and the Etna as a stock of concern, and they should have, because whenever the stocks get low, stop fishing. It doesn't matter if you have to release other fish to other streams. You can't let the runs be killed off, and that's what's going to happen in the Matsu. Look at Oregon. Look at Washington. Look what's happened. They over-harvested those runs, so they got down so low they couldn't reproduce themselves. Now, the Board of Fish is doing that again. They did not take the steps they had to protect those species. And I'm coming to you as members of the legislature our last resort. Something has to be done to protect those fish. Because when that run's gone, they're gone. Number two, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, we have gone back...
30 seconds.
We have gone back 10 years in time as far as the public goes. You're going to hear from the public this summer. We've lost our right to harvest in Cook Inlet. They took, this board took away over half of it again. And you're going to hear about it from the public. They're not going to have the opportunity to catch reds. We've been set back in 10 years in time. We now get 15% of the harvest. There's 220,000 licensed anglers in South Central. We get 15%. There's 1,320 commercialmen. They get 85%. In Cook Inlet, Mr. Chairman, members of the board, it's not fair. It's lopsided. The public should have more voice. I thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Penny. Questions or comments from Mr. Penny? Okay, thank you. Next, we will go to back to Fairbanks to Mr. Mike Tinker.
Thank you, Senator, and welcome this afternoon. I want to thank Senator Green for taking the issue head-on and producing Senate Bill 284 for us to look at. Alaska history suggests that this isn't the first reconsideration of fish management. My recollection is it's one of the reasons we had statehood. Previous fish boards, at least in the last 5-6 years and previous past, recognized that Alaskans wanted to catch and eat some of the fish hatched and found in our waters, and they made policies like the sustainable salmon management policy, for example. The last 5 years, boards have been a disaster for any non-commercial user. They avoid their own policies, they disrespect the opinions of those opposed to commercial fishery interests, especially the advisory committees. Definitely missing is an Alaska use attitude. Going back to the Cook Inlet meeting example, they certainly did do the proper thing in finding chum and sockeye stocks of concern, but then they turned around and, not following their policy, did absolutely nothing to change the intercept fisheries, even put windows in them that cause at least part of the problem. I recommend that you endorse the changes that are proposed in the committee substitute and send a strong message on behalf of Alaskans who want to catch and eat some fish. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Tinker. Questions or comments, Mr. Tinker? Seeing none, we'll next go to Kenai to Mr. Monty Roberts. Are you there, Mr. Roberts?
Yes, sir, I am.
And if you would put yourself on the record, you have 2 moments. 2 minutes.
Mr. Chairman, members of the Senate Resource Committee, my name is Monty Roberts. I live in Soldotna, Alaska, and I'm a sport fish guide operator. I'm in support of House Bill, or Senate Bill 284 in concept, but I have some concerns as to the makeup of the proposed changes. The two seats that are designated to the commercial fishing interests are fine, and the three personal use or subsistence seats are concerning me because, having just gone through the South Central voyage cycle, there's some pretty intricate fisheries that go on, and people with no fishing experience in the sport fishing industry have a really tough time tracking what those changes end up implying. So I see two places in here where we're excluded from holding a seat, but there's no places we're guaranteed a seat at the table, and that concerns me. That's my livelihood.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Roberts. Questions or comments from Mr. Roberts? Seeing none, we next will go to Mr. John McCombs off net. Mr. McCombs, are you there?
Hello?
Yeah, Mr. McCombs?
Yeah.
Yes, please put yourself on the record and we'd be proud to hear from you.
Thank you, Senator. My name is John McCombs and I'm a longtime 32-year drift gillnet fisherman in Cook Inlet, and I vote to, I'd urge you to vote this down. It's a bad piece of law. Putting people on by region hasn't worked, and certainly won't work putting them on by gear type. So I think that the board failed to address emerging fisheries and fully allocated limited entry fishery already, and considerations by gear type aren't going to be the answer. So thank you for this opportunity.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. McCombs. For
can I ask him a question?
Yes, Mr. Yeah. McCombs, there's a question from Senator Green.
Yeah, Mr. McCombs, thanks for calling in. Do you have any recommendations for how to distinguish membership?
How to distinguish membership? membership on the board.
If not by gear type, if not by geographic locations, what would be good determiners?
If you need a professional board, if you need trained scientists on the Board of Fish, maybe we've entered a new era. Maybe it needs to be taken out of the political realm and put back in the hands of the state.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. McCombs, for taking the time and the insightful comments.
Thank you, Senator.
Okay, next we'll go to Beaver Nelson in Homer.
Yeah, hello. My name is Beaver Nelson. I've lived in Homer since 1965. I'm a commercial fisherman, sport fisherman, subsistence fisherman, and personal use fisherman. And I think the present system, as we have it, is working pretty well. I think we have more well-rounded board members with varied interests. And I trust their judgment and their integrity better than having a politicized board, which I think is what we'd have with this proposed legislation. We'd have a hardcore special interest board members, what we'd have, and I think it would just turn into a real mess. The proposed restrictions for board membership, I think, would limit the pool of candidates. I mean, it just narrows things down into the special interest groups again. And most commercial fishermen also sport fish, and also personal use and subsistence. Most sport fishermen also personal use and subsistence fish. So there's really no need for three personal use subsistence seats in this proposed legislation. That's all I've got.
Thank you, Mr. Nelson. Are there questions or comments from Mr. Nelson? Yeah, and thank you again for calling in. Next, we will go to Matt Sue, Mr. Bruce Knowles.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Bruce Knowles from Willow. I serve on the Fish and Game Advisory Committee up there. I'm the chairman of the new committee. I've been in Alaska for almost 31 years. I've served on the Fish and Game Advisory Committee for, I think, about 10 or 12 years here in the Valley. And knowing the history of the board, I do, since statehood. Statehood was held up over a year for the makeup of the original board because it was made up of all commercial fishermen. And they would not allow it to occur, so they remade it up of commercial fishermen, but they said they were hunters, fishermen, personal use, and the yada yada, and that's how we got what we have today. The only progress that has ever been made with the Board of Fisheries was during the 90s when we had a board that was made up of all the user groups, and we developed sound management, historical management plans. The sustainable salmon policy was brought forth. And we were making good progress until the commercial fishing interest got control of the board again. And now we're back in the dark ages. We see our stock of concerns going, and we see action plans without any actions. And I think that this bill is sorely needed to bring us back into the daylight of salmon management. And I do support this, and everyone that I've talked to supports it. Thank you very much for your work.
Yeah, thank you, Bruce. Are there questions or comments to Mr. Knowles? Seeing none, next we'll go to the room here to Mr. Ricky Geese.
Hi, my name is Ricky Geese. I'm the executive director of Kenai River Sport Fishing Association. I live in Kenai, Alaska. A couple things. Conceptually, I don't necessarily have any problems with the bill. The Kenai, I'll point out that some of the ACs across the state have gone towards designated seats. The Kenai Soldotna AC, for example, they've designated three seats in terms of people who hold commercial permits, three people who own charter license on the Kenai River. There's hunting and subsistence seats, so they have gone towards that. And it does seem to be working a little bit. It's brought a balance in terms of commercial interests and sport fish interests on the Kenai Soldotna, both are important to our area in our economy. I would say that if you have language in this bill that you make it tight in terms of anything that would conflict something out, like we were talking earlier today in the other bill about conflicts, would just be an immediate family member if they had a commercial license, or, you know, it's not your brother-in-law, it's not your, you know, third relative removed, but it's you yourself that actually hold the permit, and that's what they do on the Kenai Soldotna AC. So I think that works good. You know, Alaska is moving into a new age of fisheries for the 21st century, and I think some discussion I like and would respect that a lay board continue to be in place, but I do think at some point other members could be integrated into the board on a professional level, so you have a mix of a lay board and a professional level. And I really do think that on some of these issues, there needs to be more professional muscle there, especially in the area of economics. I do believe you could have people from the Department of Commerce be a part of this, because I know both in the commercial industry, we're looking at many ways to improve the quality and economics of the commercial salmon industry. I know in the sport fish industry, there are guide issues, numbers of guided issues. So those type of things, I think, can have some professional engagement on a larger board, potentially.
10 seconds.
Okay. Thank you for your time.
Okay. Thank you. Questions or comments for Ricky Geese? Okay, seeing none, we will next go off net to Mr. David Martin.
Hello?
Oh, Mr. Martin, can you hear us okay?
Yeah, I got you.
Very good. Put yourself on the record. We'd be proud to hear from you.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, that resource the committee members. My name is David Martin from Clinton Gulf. I'm a current chairman of the Central Peninsula Advisory Committee. I've been involved in the Board of Fish process for over 25 years. I'm also been fishing in Cook Inlet commercially for about 36 years. I'm opposed to Senate Bill 284. Everyone in the legislature, and for that matter, everyone in the state, says that they support fish and game in Alaska to be managed biologically based on abundance, using the best reliable science and biological data available. Yet when some groups do not give what they want based on strictly allocation, whether it is from the Board of Fish or the Board of Game Actions, they cry foul on the scientific data because the data didn't justify their allocative requests or agendas. This is what happened in the Upper Cook Inlet Board of Fish meeting. The data showed that the Susitna sonar was undercounting, and the actual count at the weirs verified the sockeye escapement was being met and exceeded. Scientific data also showed that the commercial fisheries has and is severely restricted from catching northern-bound salmon stock, and that 70 to 90% of the salmon make it in the river. Any problems are not in the saltwater, they're in the river. I believe Senate Bill 284 and the latest maneuver to move the Sedona ADF&G Department to Anchorage are unfortunate and a knee-jerk reaction that will only result in undermining biological management, the Board of Fish process, and the Department of Fish and Game. If using reliable scientific data and biological management is not the mission of the Board of Fish, then increasing it to any number of designated seats will not be in the best long-term interest of the resource and the people of Alaska. We need to learn from the mistakes of the lower 48 and keep politics out of fish and game management to protect our habitat. Let the biologists do their job and the legislature do their job by funding the Susitna study that is outlined by the Board of Fish Action Plan and requested by the Commissioner and Fish and Game and Cook Inlet Aquaculture Association. Restructuring the Board of Fish and the Sedona Department of Fish and Game will be counterproductive and more costly. Both measures will cause more problems and solve none. You cannot compromise and disregard scientific data and biological management. Commercial fisheries is the number
Mr. Martin, if you could sum up in the next 10 seconds, please.
Yep, I am. Commercial fishing is the number one employer in the state, and it must be managed by board members that have knowledge of this resource and the industry. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Questions or comments for Mr. Martin? Seeing none, next we will go to Mr. Hal Hume in Fairbanks. Oh, Mr. Hume, can you hear me?
Yes, just getting my mic turned on. Thank you for this opportunity to speak. My name is Hal Hume. I live in Fairbanks, Alaska, and have for over 50 years. This will be my ninth year. While I don't have the background that Virgil and Mike Tinker have in the experience, this will be my ninth year serving on the Fairbanks AC, and I've had numerous opportunities to observe and judge the actions of the Board of Fish. Without any doubt, this is an extremely biased body in favor of the commercial fishing industry. All other categories of non-commercial fishermen suffer at the hands of a board that is slanted at least 6-1 in favor of the commercial guys. I attended the December 2005 board meeting at Valdez, At that time, Dr. Fred Bouse was the only non-commercial biased member on the board. He represented sport, personal use, and subsistence fishermen in an outstanding manner, in my view, but to no avail. His eloquent and timely presentations were totally ignored. At the time, we were and remain vitally concerned about the unreasonable taking of king salmon at the mouth of the Copper River. There is strong evidence that the wild stock of king salmon is being decimated and that we may soon find ourselves in the same condition as our neighbors in Washington, possessing former salmon streams that no longer produce any salmon. We cannot allow this to happen in Alaska. The commercial fishermen, many of whom actually reside outside of this state but maintain local resident addresses for residency purposes only, seem to care less whether or not we maintain a sustainability for generations to come. They seem to only care about today's pocketbook. It is absolutely essential that the Board of Fish have a balance of interest represented by board members. This resource belongs to all of Alaskans and not just the commercial guys, many of whom are not Alaskans.
Yeah, Mr. Hume at Charlie Huggins here. Could you sum up the next 10 seconds, please?
Yeah, I'm just about ready to.
Thank you.
I resided here for over 50 years and have three generations following already. I am vitally concerned that my children, grandchildren, and great-grandchildren will not enjoy the opportunities to hunt and fish as presently exist. Already, we can testify to the diminishing stocks, both in quality and quantity, in the Gulkana River. This will only be corrected if we establish and maintain a balance of interest on the fish board. I implore you to do everything possible to assure that Alaskans are represented on future fish boards. Thank you very much for this opportunity.
Thank you, Mr. Hume. Questions or comments for Mr. Hume? Seeing none, we'll go now to Homer, Mr. Marvin Peters. Hello, Mr. Peters.
Hello, this is Marvin Peters. I'm the chairman of the Homer Fish and Game Advisory Committee. I've been on the committee for 25 years or so. I've been involved with the Board of Fish process for most of that time in some fashion, fairly heavily involved in the 90s and then on up to the present. And I feel very confident in saying that there are no runs in the state that are being killed off by any management that we have now. There may be some problems in the Matsu. I think they're being addressed now as they're starting to get functional counters and weirs and replace the ones that don't work and are given a real false impression. I noticed a lot of the comments sent in support of this bill either weren't aware of it or don't recognize or just forgot to include some valid weir counts that show that the problem is really not as great as we're being told here. I don't like the idea that the personal use, I don't like the do not hold, do not own language. This would allow, for example, this would allow the executive director of Kenai River Sport Fishing to be appointed as a commercial representative or a personal use representative. It doesn't really require any actual interest as a to represent that user group. Certainly, the personal use representatives would have to be drawn from a pool of people with little understanding of major fisheries in the state, and preferably they would have no special interest. So that means they know less about it, as far as I'm concerned. I'd rather see people that are strongly one way or the other and know what they're talking about. Not to say that personal use fishermen don't, but in general, they don't.
Sorry, please, Mr. Peters, that was, yep. You have about 10 seconds, if you would, to wrap up.
Give biology a chance to work in an area that has been subject to the whims of politically motivated boards. Up until the last 5 years, we've had the best boards we've ever had in the last 5 years. This system seems intended to provide unfair representation, especially in light of current conflict of interest rules. Any real commercial fisherman would not be able to participate.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Peters. Questions or comments from Mr. Peters? Next, we will go to Mr. Tom Payton in Matsu.
Hello, committee members. My name is Tom Payton. I'm a resident of Squintna, and I have been since 1975. Squintna is up the Entna, about 75 miles up from saltwater, right in the heart of that northern district problem. I have been on the Mount Yenlova Fish and Game Advisory Committee since 1986, and about that same time, my experience with the Board of Fisheries started when we in Squinta submitted a proposal to the board then to allow a subsistence fish wheel fishery on the Yenta. We were quickly denied that opportunity, and we resubmitted that proposal in the following board cycle, then we're quickly denied that opportunity again. And although our area had fish wheel history, and I had testimony from previous fish wheel owners at the board meeting and videos of the fish wheels turning. Now at the time, there was no recourse since I exhausted all my remedies, so we went to court. And in 1997, seven Supreme Court members unanimously agreed that the Board of Fisheries had erred in treating the subsistence users of Squintna. And at the time I originally filed in 1988, it took almost 10 years to go through court, all seven members of the Board of Fisheries were commercially affiliated or were commercial fishermen. And they just, in my opinion, they resented somebody from such a small fishery as ours expecting to get any allocation out of the Cook Inlet stocks. And what I see is an allocation problem in Cook Inlet, because the time has come to change this process. This bill could very possibly change that process. Times have changed in this state. It's not going to be forever that commercial fishermen control our salmon stocks. We have to look to the future. We have to accept the inevitable. We have more people here, more different, diverse user groups than a few set netters and gill netters.
Hey, Tom, would you get you to wrap up the next 10 seconds, please?
Yeah, I'm in support of this. I'm presently chairman of our Fish and Game Advisory Committee, and all of our members are in support of this, too.
Okay, thank you, Tom, and we appreciate it. Questions or comments for Mr. Payton? Next, we'll go to Ruben in the room.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Ruben Hankey. I live in Kenai. My wife and I own and operate Harry Gaines Kenai River Fishing on the banks of the river. I'd just like to say, in participating in the board process for over 20 years, it's been a real struggle to get some sort of sport fish representation, a very big struggle to get any kind of PU representation on that board of fish. I agree and support SB 284. I think that will finally bring some fair representation to the board. We see this in, you know, like was mentioned in earlier in other testimony, we see this in other ACs around the state. It just pretty much guarantees that you're going to have representation from each user group on the board. So that's pretty much all I have to say, and I really appreciate your time.
You bet. Thank you. Questions or comments for Ruben? Okay, thank you very much for being brief and concise. Next, we will go back to Matsu, to Mr. Howard Delo.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee. My name is Howard Delo. I'm currently a sitting member of the Board of Fish, but I'm speaking for myself, and I'm going to have to say that I do not support the Senate bill as it's currently written. I see it basically as just substituting another set of concerns for the concerns that you've already heard voiced. That's kind of the short and sweet of where I'm coming from, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Delo. And we have a question for you from Senator Green. Sorry.
Yeah, Howard. Are there changes you would make, or do you have any suggestions? If you do, you might want to just drop them off at the office or get them to us, okay?
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, and thank you, Mr. Delo, for your brevity and conciseness. And next we will go to Mr. Ron Rainey in the room.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Ron Rainey. I'm a past chairman of Kenai River Sport Fishing. I will be brief. I'm a personal use fisherman, so I obviously don't know what I'm talking about.
No comment, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, you now have 30 seconds.
But I obviously do support the concept of this bill. I've been going to Board of Fish meetings for 20 years also. And you choose up sides and get your guy appointed to the board, and whoever has the stroke there, they win the allocation battle. And we need to have fairness in this allocation battle, and we do need assigned seats for user groups. Public use fishermen have never had a seat in the board, and they really took a hosing on this last Board of Fish meeting, just really bad. And I would strongly urge some type of relief in this area. And I'll be happy to answer any questions if you have any.
Thank you, Mr. Rainey, for being very brief and concise. Senator Wagner.
I just want you to define what kind of hosing they took. In all seriousness, because that the public use sector.
We had established windows that allowed a given time that someone from the valley could come down and take their subsistence or public use fishing on the Kenai River, and that was literally set aside, because now the local manager can, ADF&G manager, commercial fish manager, can do away with that window if his escapement is at a certain point. And we had studies from our people that looked at this, and the windows actually didn't decrease the commercial catch that much, or increase the escapement that much, and it provided a perfect opportunity for those personal use fishermen to come down, and they knew that the fish would be there because the nets were out of the water, and that's virtually been done away with. That's why.
Thank you. Yeah.
Good. Thank you very much, Ron, and we appreciate your timeout. Next, we will go back to Mat-Su to Mr. Denny Ham.
Thank you.
Denny Hammond. Excuse me.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for the opportunity to speak. My name is Denny Hammond. I'm the current chairman of the Mat Valley Fish and Game Advisory Committee. I've been on the committee for over 10 years now, and spent a lot of time participating in the Board of Fish process. Come to realize over these years that the board seems to put way more emphasis on the allocation of these fisheries resources rather than on the biological issues that have come up throughout the years. It's quite unfortunate in my mind, actually, that this board has become such a political animal, but it's not surprising given the wide variety of users nowadays and all the lobbying that people do to get their allocation of fish. For these reasons, I believe the time has come. SB 284 is a great bill. I think it does need to become law. We need to make sure that each of these user groups get fair representation when it comes to dealing with these very contentious allocation issues and when those decisions are made. One last thing, if I might, I would like to respond to all the comments I keep hearing about our fish counters up here that don't seem to work. And are undercounting the fish in our rivers. These are the same counters we've been using for 20-some years. And everything being relative, how anybody can look at the data and the counts and not look at the fact that these runs are in dismal shape. Even the Board of Fish had to list or talk as a stock to yield concern. But then they turned right around on the other hand and opened up the commercial fisheries in Cook Inlet. I mean, they didn't do their job, and I think if we to get the right people that represent interests, everybody will get fair representation when it comes to those allocations, because that's what it boils down to nowadays is allocation.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Hammond. Questions or comments for Mr. Hammond, Mat-Su? Okay, next we'll come back to the room. The last person that signed up in the room, Mr. Ben Ellis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Ben Ellis. I live at 4111 Patterson Circle in Anchorage, Alaska. I support this bill. I had the privilege in the 90s working with two governors, Governor Hickel and Governor Knowles, to actually to work on Board of Fish appointments as far as talking to potential board members. And I agree with exactly with what Senator Green said. This is just putting into statute what the diversity and the idea was, at least during the 90s when I was involved, of trying to provide a balanced board, an educated, balanced board. And we've heard a lot of problems today and a lot of frustrations that's come out from other people. There's still going to be some of these issues and some of these problems to deal with, but it would be a balanced, educated board that would make decisions and in many ways would reduce, I think, some of these conflicts. So, sir, I support the bill, and thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Ben. Questions or comments to Ben? Ben, I'll make one comment to you is that I don't know whether this is true or false, but I've heard from multiple people over time that mentioned that of the governors that were involved in this process, they give Governor Knowles relatively high marks. And they said I've heard some say he was the best in their view over some period of time. That may not be true. That's what people said to me.
May I respond?
Yes, please.
You know, you have to look back in Governor Hickel set the precedent of increasing. At that time, if I remember correctly, there were five commercial fishermen and two sport fishermen that were on the board. Governor Hickel actually ran toward the end of a campaign on a platform putting a third sport fisherman there and got a bump. And so he had started a trend, but I would agree with you 100% that Governor Knowles was concerned with reaching out into all of the areas of the state, into the various types of user groups. And I found, quite frankly, that the commercial fishermen that sat on the boards during that period of time came with a very balanced, a very open mind that looked for scientific and educated answers. And I think the board chairs during that time reflected that.
Yeah. And just for the record, I probably have never voted for Governor Knowles, but I give him credit where credit's due. Next, Mr. Dan Lewis of Mat-Su.
Mr. Chairman and the board, thank you very much for being with us here tonight. I've been up 14 hours now myself, and I can only imagine what you've been up all day here. I'm a resident of Wasilla. My name is Dan Lewis. Like I stated earlier, I've been here my entire adult life of 28 years. I'm in support of this bill also. I don't know about the weirs and the counters. I'm fortunate enough to be on the Northern Cook Inlet, Susitna River, 90 plus days a year, and we're in a lot of trouble up here. We need to get some fair representation on this committee so it's fair to all the users. We need to get something done right now. You can't blame the counter. You can't blame the Northern. And thank you very much for your time. Lida, thank you for proposing this bill, too.
Thank you.
Good night.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Lewis, and thanks for staying up as late as you have. You have a good evening of sleep, hopefully, and a good dinner. Are there other people online that we have not heard from? Hearing no response to that, we've heard from everyone in the room that signed up. Okay, good. I see no other names other than Mr. Kevin Saxby, who has been diligently standing by for questions. Kevin, do you have any productive comments? He is gone also. He gone to dinner. Okay. So with that, unless we have further comments from committee members, we are... Yes. Senator Stevens.
Mr. Chairman, I heard several comments about fairness. I think that's good. Everything needs to be fair. I come from a community which depends heavily on the fishing industry, and it does cause me some concerns that out of seven members, only two represent the commercial fishing industry, which is, as we've said, the biggest employer in the state, which does produce products that go around the world. And I just want to lodge that concern that it seems to me that an industry that is so important to Alaska, has been so important, established Alaska. We were the only industry in Alaska at statehood is only will only have two members out of seven. So I just want to lodge that concern and let you know that it's it'll be a continual interest to me how this board is developed. And fairness is, I suppose, in the mind of the beholder. But when an industry is that important, I just think that two out of seven is a little short.
Yep. Okay. Thank you very much. Other comments from members? Very good and productive meeting. We're adjourned.
Thank you.